As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome back to the latest edition of Until Saturday. I'm Ari Wasserman, joined by my good buddy Chris Vanini. We've got a pretty big show here. We're going to check in on the first day of the portal. You know, I don't know if there are any major fireworks in terms of shockers, but total number of people entering the portal is much higher than it was a year ago. We'll get into that. We're also going to check in on Kalen DeBoer's first spring game at Alabama and Kirby Smart's campaign for the third national title. We'll have Kennington Smith III and Seth Emerson, our beat writers for Alabama and Georgia, on the show later to talk about what they saw at the spring games over past weekend. And we'll also touch on the penalties that Michigan has received from recruiting violations stemming back from COVID. That's not the penalties that people might be waiting on when it comes to the Spygate stuff, but penalties nonetheless we'll discuss. Chris, how are you doing today?
I'm good, man. It's a beautiful day here in Dallas for the both of us. Spring games are wrapping up, but now we've hit spring portal. Free agency, the second round of this. A lot of names. Mix on how impactful these players are, but this is kind of the thing now. Every year it seems to get bigger and bigger.
Yep. Welcome, guys, to Until Saturday. Be sure to follow the podcast on Apple, wherever you listen to your podcast. Please help support the show by dropping a 5-star review. Leave a question or interact with the show. We'll do our best to acknowledge you on the show because we appreciate your support and want you guys to feel part of the community. Leave us a voicemail on our Until Saturday phone line for future mailbag episodes. That phone number is 316-462-9852. Again, that is 316-462-9852. Question, comment, concern, joke, impression, anything you want to do. Leave it on that line. We listen to it. We love it. We make a point to hear what you guys are saying and get some good laughs out of there too. So let's go into the portal, Chris. It opened on Tuesday. There was some confusion for some reason. Some people thought that it opened on Monday, April 15th, but it actually was Tuesday, April 16th. In 2023, there were 89 scholarship athletes entering the portal on the first day. And 339 in the first week, Chris. We are recording this podcast at 1 Central Time on Tuesday, on the first day, and there are already up to 150 entrants this year, which means that we're on pace. It's almost half of the total from last year, which means we're on pace for blowing last year's number out of the water. Did you expect this to happen? And what is your takeaway from just the raw data right out of the gate?
Yeah, I'm not surprised. You, me, and Max talked about it last week, but the fact now that there are unlimited transfers that are allowed because of that court ruling and soon to be NCAA rule change, it's going to keep happening. I think when the portal first started and we saw a lot of big numbers on stuff, we thought, all right, it's going to take a couple years. Players and teams will get used to it and the numbers will come down. That hasn't happened. It's continued to go up every single year. This year is going to obviously blow last year's spring out of the water, it looks like. And that's just there's a lot of different reasons people move. You come out of spring, you don't win your starting job, or maybe you're lower on the depth chart. Maybe you want to renegotiate an NIL deal or you can get something bigger elsewhere. Or maybe coaches kind of brush you out the door, which we know happens. So, like, this is going to keep happening in this current state of college football. So, you know, we see these numbers, the reporters like to put out the big numbers and everybody reacts to it, whether it's good or bad or whatever. But I think this is just the norm right now.
So after we're done with this podcast, I'm writing a column about how this is the norm. And I actually think that for as uncomfortable as it is going to be or has been for people who are enduring change, which is pretty constant with anything in life, right? Change is scary, you know, new house, new state, new career, new anything. It's scary. But the thing that I kind of like about it, and I think the angle of this column is going to be, is that at least it gives fans more engagement with their team on a year-round basis. I remember when I first started covering college football, Chris, back in 2009, my first year on a beat. My favorite thing about it, and I said I never wanted to cover the NFL, because in college football, you have a 4 or 5 or 6 month period, maybe, of just complete intensity. And then you have an off season, a true off season, you know, except for National Signing Day in February and spring football. I mean, you had the entire summer basically to be on easy street. And now, you know, not that the portal happens in the summer, but it is a year round engagement. To be a fan of a team, you cannot just check back in September and know exactly where things are at. You have to be engaged with the days, the comings and the goings of what your team is doing. And I think that might be one of the benefits of this. What do you think of that?
See, I think there are a lot of fans who are like, I don't know what's going on with the portal. I'll find out when this is all over. Come September, we'll find out who's on the team and I'll move forward from there, because it's too hard to keep track of everybody who's going in, coming out and whatever. And I think that is why some more casual fans may be kind of frustrated at the sport. You get close to your fall camp comes and you're like, wait a minute, our star running back isn't on the team anymore. Oh, he transferred after spring. Oh, I hate this transfer portal type of stuff. I can see a lot of fans feeling that way. But to your point about needing to be engaged, I think that's fair. I think that's what we see from the NFL. We've got the NFL draft. You've got the combine. Right. You've got workouts. It really is a year-round schedule. And college football hasn't been able to do that because academic calendars and various different things. But now it pretty much is that. And so if you want reasons to be talking about college football year round, that's a good thing. If you are too frustrated by your team continually losing its best players, then, you know, not so much. It is very much a big thing now.
Yeah. I wonder too. And this is just a food chain system, right? So if your team loses its players, that means it's probably in a position to take players from a team that's smaller.
Right.
But it, to me, you look at what all is going on here, and I can't tell if people like it or hate it, because when you look at the NBA, what are the two most important times of the NBA season? Free agency playoffs, in the summer playoffs, and the playoffs. The regular season is on. I don't know if the average NBA fan is locking into the Utah Jazz Sacramento Kings game on Thursday night on TNT. Maybe they are. But I feel like that's such a transient sport in terms of where are the players going and the contracts that they're getting. I think that transactionally we have found in our reporting through the years that recruiting coverage and transactional stories perform better than features and recaps. So people are obsessed with the movement. They are excited and invigorated by the notion that your team could get a player or lose a player at any moment. It creates drama. You can't fall asleep or you're going to miss stuff. Like, isn't that like every single property of what makes any entertainment product work? Like, it stinks when your team loses a good player. But I don't think I heard any Oregon fans talking about how much they hated the portal last year when they got Dylan Gabriel. Like, when you get a player, it's awesome. So, like, you know, there's winners and losers. And the thing that I loved about covering recruiting so often over the last 15 years is that even though the games only happen 10 to 15 times a year in the fall and into the new year, you are competing with your rivals on a daily basis for talent. And when you win a recruit, if you are going against your rival, it feels like a win over your rival. It's a different game. It's a different scoreboard, but it's still competing nonetheless. So I think that people are resistant to it, Chris, for obvious reasons, because change and listen, the whole sport is changing. It's not just players coming and going, the playoff system, the conference situation, everything. It's a lot at once. It's scary. But I think in this weird 4 or 5 year window that we're probably in right now between what the players are going to get and how we're going to put an end to the rapid movement of the rosters, the only way to embrace this tough time or this interesting time or this new time is by at least looking at the bright side, which is hell. If I'm a Clemson fan, well, maybe not a Clemson fan. They don't do the portal. But if I'm an Alabama fan, shit, this is entertaining.
And you're right. And that's accepting, by the way, that this endeavor is the entertainment industry. You know, as much as some people don't want college football to be that, it is that. It has been that for a while. So when you
how
have
could you
things
not
like
want it? It's what it is.
A portal, when you have things like realignment, as much as we all seem to hate it, the numbers show that people read and engage with that stuff. The one thing I would push back on, though, is that if you're a top 10 team and you're typically the school getting the guys from the portal, you like it a lot more than bottom of the P5, G5, where you're just losing your top players. It's very discouraging if you're a Group of Five fan to have a breakout player and then know you're probably not going to keep them the next year.
Yeah. But does the Group of Five pluck from D2? Like, it's not just like the only people who are getting interesting, cool. Like, there's G5 players coming up in this portal, and we're going to get into individual people who have gone in so far and discuss those. So if you're here for that, we will get to that. But like, I like have a group chat of Arizona fans because I went to college there and a lot of my buddies are engaged. And I go back and I look at U of A, because U of A, I think, is the perfect example of a P5 program that's probably towards the bottom of the food chain when it comes to this stuff. They recruited well for the first time since I was in college. Their coach brought in dynamic receiver and a dynamic quarterback that altered the course of the program, right? That coach bolts to a bigger school and takes basically the entire freshman class with him, right? That stinks, okay? There's no doubt about it. That stinks. But Noah Fifita and T-Mac, who we all, including myself, thought were going to go to Washington with Jed Fish, stayed at Arizona. And then you go look at some of the beneficiaries that Arizona has had, like Jacob Cowing, for instance, who came from a lower level. Think about how bought in U of A fans are for those guys this year, and like how exciting and entertaining, despite being angry or hurt or even blindsided by what happened, they are, and how exciting this season is going to be. And everybody is always distracted by who leaves and who's a backstabber and who's trying new things or who gave up or all the other narratives that happened with the portal. But what about the people who don't do the portal while the portal is a thing and then become heroes of the place that they're at? Like, I think it's short-sighted to just say the only people who are benefiting from this are Alabama and Ohio State and Georgia, when that, I don't think that's the case. Alabama was probably hurt quite a bit from the portal when Nick Saban retired. Their five-star quarterback, freshman, and funny enough, he went to Ohio State. But these teams lose players. Ohio State lost one of their important future running back pieces on Tuesday when Dallin Hayden entered the portal. It's not like, think about how exciting it's going to be to figure out which program might end up getting a quarterback from Ohio State if one enters the portal as they have five. Like, this is a food chain, sure, but people go up and down.
Yes. And that's important. And Max puts together these numbers every year on Max Olson. And the majority of transfers are either going laterally levels or they're going down. It's not as many people moving up for obvious reasons. There just aren't as many spots there. And so it reminds me, so your point about the guys who could go in the portal but don't, and then players, fans have a deeper attachment to them. I think that can change year to year. We talked about Damian Martinez on the last one. He's someone who turned down portal overtures in the past, but now is finally going into the portal and fans are upset about it. I got a good mailbag question the other day for the Group of Five mailbag saying, what does happiness look like for Group of Five fans in the portal era? Knowing that if you have a big year, your coach is gone, all your best players are gone. And I think my answer to that is you got to take every individual season as its own vacuum now, as its own window. We don't go year to year on this stuff anymore. You could have a big year. Mm-hmm. You could have a down year. Next year could be totally different. And I think fans have to kind of adapt to that. If you're having a great season, enjoy it. Appreciate that coach. Appreciate that quarterback. Bask in every win, knowing that who knows what's going to happen, what's going to be there next year. And on the flip side, if you're having a bad year, know that you're 1 year away from turning things around. Texas State, USF had big seasons after being down for a while. This doesn't just apply to the group of five. The portal has shown that you can change your fortunes quicker than ever, going both ways. And I think that is a reason for fans to stay engaged. Just know that year to year, it may be completely different, right?
You are from Detroit.
Yes.
I assume when you were growing up, you liked Detroit sports. You're a yes. Tigers fan, I assume, as a kid. Maybe not now, but when you were growing up, did you like the Tigers?
I did.
When you are a Tigers fan in Major League Baseball, and I know they had Miggy for a while, and they had Verlander for a while. But when you are a fan of a smaller market team in Major League Baseball, don't you know or go have just a understanding of, if we have a young stud that we get at a bargain because we brought him up through the minors, and he comes in here and we have him on his rookie deal and he hits 44 home runs 3 years in a row, he's probably going to be on the Yankees in 3 years. Like, that is the way that baseball works. Now, lower market teams do win the World Series at times, right? But for the most part, if you go back and you look, like, you have Houston, you have Dallas area, you have the Yankee, like all the teams that are great, Boston,
Dodgers.
It's a big market league. So it doesn't mean that Pirates fans or Tigers fans or Guardians fans are hopeless, but there is an understanding of the place that you are on the food chain. And the thing I have, if this is a group of five discussion, is like, I totally feel for places. Like, I felt bad for Pitt 2 years ago when Jordan Addison left. Like, that is an uncomfortable reality, because if you are right and you develop a person and they are good, odds are you're probably not going to keep them if you are on the lower rungs of those food chains. But don't you have to be a rational person about it and know where you are? And you have to basically gauge your success in accordance to the reasonable outlook of your program. And the fact of the matter is the group of five now is being included in the playoff. So that gripe is gone. You're in the system. You have a chance to compete at a high level. And during those special years where you have that player who breaks out, maybe you'll do something that you couldn't do 5 years ago. I think that, frankly speaking, from top to bottom, the group of five, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're more plugged in on this than I am, is the group of five, save for losing a star player or two, in a better position roster-wise? Getting players who are coming down and taking players that are special from D2 and building better rosters that can compete at a high level, even if they lose the star power at the top?
It very much varies place to place. When Billy Napier left Louisiana for Florida, the roster got decimated. But you know who else just lost a coach and had their roster decimated? Washington. They just played for the national championship. You know, like, this doesn't just apply to the group of five. This is just the mindset for everybody now, that year to year is going to be completely different because of the portal. You can lose a lot of things. You can also gain a lot of things. Those Detroit Tigers, in 2003, they lost the most games in American League history. 3 years later, they were playing for the World Series. You know, like, and that's fun. And I think you can have teams turn things around quicker than ever before.
Who were the best players on that 03 Tigers team? Do you remember?
Bobby Higginson, Shane Halter. It was a rough, rough outfit. A couple years later, you've got Pudge Rodriguez, Justin Verlander, Kenny Rogers, because they signed some good guys.
How many of those stars finished their careers in Detroit?
I don't know off the top of my head.
I don't think any of them.
I think the roster situation is very different now, because, you know, shortly after I moved here, Sonny Dykes takes over SMU. He immediately tries to go get guys for transfers. This is before the portal, before the 1 year sit out and all that kind of stuff. And he rebuilt that program very quickly. So, like, I think you have to have a coach and an organization that is going to be able to withstand these types of changes, know that they're going to be coming, and to bring it all back around. It's entertaining. It's something for us to talk about. Normally, in April, a couple years ago, we would just be talking about spring football and who looked good at practice or whatever. Now there's stuff happening. And that is exciting.
Yeah. Chris, I'm looking at the graphic that I'm seeing on Twitter here that Dallin Hayden, the third string running back at Ohio State, who is a really good runner, and I think Ohio State fans in general wanted to see more of over the course of the past 2 years, is considering Colorado, or has heard from Colorado, Auburn, Louisville, UCLA, Virginia Tech, and Georgia Tech. Isn't that fun? Is that not fun for those teams?
Right. Exactly. And it's different, I think, as well. Transfers and recruiting, because recruiting, they're all high school kids. You don't know for sure. Hey, if it's a 5-star, it's great. If it's a 3-star, we don't know. A guy like Dallin Hayes, like, players we know, we think have a lot of ability, could show up somewhere else and make an impact. And that is
as these teams like Ohio State go out and get guys like Quinshon Judkins, who was a luxury take, not a need. They didn't need him. They took him as a luxury. That frees up really good young players who haven't had their chance yet to go to places where they can star. And if Quinshon Judkins didn't leave Ole Miss, then maybe Louisville or Auburn or UCLA or Virginia Tech don't have this young, great player that'll come in and be really good. Like, it's the circle of life. We've been watching The Lion King a lot in my house. And I got to say, that is a psychotic movie. Like, they're like the lion's crazy uncle threw his dad off the side of a cliff, and then like the song was "Get Over It, Be Happy." Like, I was like, "That's not how I would react."
Are we talking cartoon or the computer animated one?
No. We're talking the classics here, man. Like,
good.
We're doing it the right way. We're working our way up from like the cartoons that we watched when we were kids, and then we'll move on to Frozen and stuff when she gets to like 5 and 6. But
we grew up in the golden age of Disney cartoons. Wouldn't you say that period?
I don't know, because I'm
Aladdin,
not
Mulan.
Yes. Those movies were great when we were kids. I do not know if all the movies that they're making now, like Moana and Frozen and Sing, and these movies that my daughter's starting to become interested in, this is how they'll look back at these movies the way that we look at those, like The Little Mermaid and Fantasia and all those movies that we watched when we were kids. Like, it was the golden age to us. I don't know if that means that the golden age is over. All I know for sure is that Disney is a vacuum cleaner to the wallet, and they get your hooks in you. You know, Apple's being sued right now for a monopoly. You want to talk about monopoly? What about children's entertainment monopoly? I got to buy Moana diapers. I got to buy stuffed animals and little outfits and onesies because we saw it on YouTube for 5 minutes. Like, and now we're going to get suckered into going to Disney World.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't just a job board. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like a professional on LinkedIn. LinkedIn knows that small businesses are wearing so many hats, it might not have the time or resources to hire. LinkedIn is constantly finding ways to make the process easier. They even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process even easier and quicker. 2.5 million small businesses use LinkedIn for hiring. And it's time you join that number. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/CFB23. That's linkedin.com /CFB and the numbers 23 to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Why don't we go in through a few names that have gone in that entered on Monday and Tuesday. Keandre Lambert-Smith, the Penn State wide receiver, has entered the portal. He had 53 receptions, 673 yards, and 4 touchdowns in 2023. He's got 1,721 yards, 11 touchdowns in his career at Penn State. Penn State already was kind of in a bad place last year when it came to wide receiver talent. I know they got Julian Fleming in the portal from Ohio State, a former five-star prospect that grew up in the state of Pennsylvania. But what was your take on this? Is this concerning?
Well, it wasn't surprising because he hadn't been around, it looked like, for the latter part of spring. Mm-hmm. And James Franklin was asked about it and basically was like, I'm only talking about the guys who are here. So him ultimately ending up in the portal, not surprising. It is concerning if you're Penn State. We had Audrey Snyder on the last episode here to talk about Penn State and the state of their offense. And yeah, you know, Fleming mania has taken over Penn State fans, but this was your leading receiver coming back. And there's no way to spin that into a positive. I don't know the exact reason he went and is looking elsewhere. But I think that absolutely has to be concerning, especially when you have a quarterback in Drew Aller who clearly needs that wide receiver help after being a bit shaky last year. What was your reaction?
I was like, you know, I know Julian Fleming is a good player. I'm not trying to disparage him, but like, I feel like the reaction from Penn State in getting him has been like they got Marvin Harrison. And it's like, that's not who you have. Like, I don't know if like Julian Fleming is the person that's going to lead the renaissance of your offense. Like, he's a great option, very clutch player. He had a lot of big catches at Ohio State, particularly on third downs that I can recall. But it wasn't like he was the game breaker that, you know, busted games open for them and they couldn't bear to lose him. He probably was the fourth or fifth best receiver on Ohio State's roster last year. And I get that doesn't mean he's not good because their receiver room is stacked. But anytime you lose a player who is your leading receiver when you were struggling mightily a year ago, in throwing the football, I think that that's a concerning thing. It'll be interesting to see where he winds up. He was a top 50 nationally among Power 5 receivers in yards per reception, yards after catch in 2023. So, like, he was a pretty productive player in the instances where Penn State threw the ball, usually when they're playing teams that are overmatched. Definitely somebody to keep track of. Okay, let's go to Pitt. Dion Hayes, 44 total tackles, 4 sacks, 10.5 for loss in 2023. He was top 20 in hurries last year with 29 among all P5 defenders and played over 550 snaps. So we're talking about a player who not only was productive, but is super experienced and probably strikes me as somebody who will go in and contribute, play, and produce right away.
Yeah, I mean, everybody wants defensive linemen, and it's sometimes hard to find those guys in this round of the portal. Interestingly, he told the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, quote, "It's just that I don't believe we can win now. I believe we win games, but we are a developmental stage, and I just can't do that right now." End quote. The paper also reported that he had been signed to one of the highest paying NIL deals on the Pitt team for 2024. I don't know the specific details of that, but that's really interesting. And basically a player saying, you know, I want to go to a place where I'm going to win more games. We'll see where he ends up. Obviously don't know where that's going to happen yet, but Pitt is a place that has lost a couple of big time transfers in recent years. You mentioned Jordan Addison there. This is a team that's probably in the middle to lower end on the food chain of the Power Five, so to speak. So he'll be a player with a lot of interest, without a doubt. And it's interesting when players explain why. Now, whether or not you believe it, I don't know. But basically believing Pitt isn't in a place to win enough. And that's why he wants to leave, which is similar to Damian Martinez at Oregon State, who said, I believe I'm the best running back in next year's draft, and I want to go a place where I can prove that.
And it's also important to note, too, that Pitt's defensive line coach, Charlie Partridge, who was one of the best defensive line coaches in the country, left the team a few months ago to join the Indianapolis Colts in the NFL. So that is a really tough blow to Pitt staff. From what I understand, he was very close to Pat Narduzzi and, you know, was one of the most consistent influences, both in recruiting and in the development of that defensive line.
Charlie Partridge's name.
Yeah.
Really good coach.
Yeah. So that probably, if I had to guess, has something to do with it. Okay. Savion Washington, right tackle from Colorado, allowed 4 sacks and 20 pressures and 660 snaps last season, is in the portal. Penny Boone, the running back from Louisville, is an ex-All-MAC running back, transferred to the Cardinals in January. And Caden Proctor, the offensive tackle from Iowa, who was at Alabama, transferred to Iowa, and now is going back to Alabama, it seems, entered the portal and has a do not contact tag on his profile. A few other ones that came in is, we already mentioned Dallin Hayden, the running back at Ohio State. It'll be interesting to see where that goes. But also, Max said that Tad Hudson, the North Carolina quarterback, has entered the portal, and he was a 4-star prospect in 2023 and redshirted his first year last year. And 8 of the top 30 quarterbacks in his recruiting class have already entered the portal this offseason. So that is kind of also an interesting trend when it comes to how exciting it is to land an elite-level quarterback player or prospect in your recruiting class, and how hard it is to freaking keep them.
Savion Washington with Colorado. We'll talk about Colorado in a minute, but
yeah,
not a positive there. Penny Boone, Louisville, really good running back, was at Toledo, all Mac. Like we said, he originally was at Maryland, then goes to Toledo.
Maryland in 2012. I don't know how he has, there are certain players where you're like, this guy has been on the team for 30 years. You know, you get that feeling. Yeah. Like every Michigan State quarterback, for instance, always feels like they've been the starter there for 9 years. Well, at least they used to be, not so much anymore. But Penny Boone, I did the state of the program for Maryland like in 2018 and was writing about him. Like, I don't even know how this man has eligibility, yeah, let alone 2 other stops. But he's an interesting person because he went Big Ten to Mac and now back up to the higher level. That's kind of a cool career route.
Yeah, and we don't know where he goes now, but that's a really good running back who's now on the market right now looking for his 4th school. And then Caden Proctor, not a surprise. We all knew this was coming. It had been talked about. Obviously, he was at Alabama, transfers back to Iowa where he had once committed, has a do not contact on his profile in the portal.
I still contact him. I would be so disrespectful about it. Like, I would just contact everybody.
Yeah, that's a good point. Like, are you not allowed? You probably... no reason you're not allowed to. I'm curious how many people follow that or how many don't.
Yeah, it's like when you find somebody on Instagram from a dating app and then don't wait for them to match and just message them on the social media platform. Like, could you do that in this? I mean, it's kind of like
It is kind of like that. But
Did you circumvent the Tinder match thing and go right into the Instagram DMs?
No, I got married. I got married before that stuff. I got married not long after college.
Everybody always says that people who got married before the dating app era are just like, God, I'm so happy I didn't have to go through that shit. Let me tell you, Tinder's awesome. Okay. I don't know. Like, when you're 20s and you're out having a good time going out. I mean, I don't know.
Ari,
during the Tinder era.
Ari, happily married, by the way.
Yes. Yeah. I'm not on it anymore.
Beautiful daughter. Everything is great.
I'm not on it anymore. I've been on it.
Yeah. I've been on it. Let's talk about Colorado here. Okay, so
they've had 6
talked about salt. I'm very...
Yeah, that's true. We do.
Colorado.
We talk about Tinder all the time at home.
6 players in the portal between Monday and Tuesday. A couple of offensive linemen. A receiver in there. What do you think? You were someone who has talked a lot about Deion and where things are going and the recruiting aspect of it and how that he wasn't maybe committing to that. But if you're Colorado and you're replacing your entire offensive line for the 2nd year in a row after you just had a terrible year, that cannot be a good thing. You got to build some continuity. You got to build some depth. Now we're going into year 2 where they're going to have the same offensive line questions we had a year ago. And that was the biggest downfall of that team, was their inability to run the ball, protect the quarterback. And you can't have much faith that that is going to get fixed with all of this turnover again, right?
Yeah, it's like on one hand, you're kind of anticipating that there should be turnover because the way that Deion Sanders has approached the roster build, it has been basically, if you can't play, we're going to replace you. Or if you're not doing what we need you to do, we're going to try to find somebody marginally better in the hopes of creating a good enough roster to have year-over-year return on the win total. But on the other hand, when you lose a few people, including your starting right tackle, during a time in which nobody knows who's going to be playing for your offensive line in 3 months, I think that's worrisome. I don't know. I mean, I've been on record a lot with Colorado on this podcast, and I don't want to go down a Colorado rabbit hole. I just don't know from my vantage point, like what I grab onto with Deion's build and go, man, this is really going well. Like, I just have a hard time with it. So if he goes out and wins 11 games, he can, you know, have his Deion press conference and I'll be like, I didn't see that coming. But I'm saying with our predictions in podcasting and in sports media, because I do think that there is this weird trend, Chris, where sports writers have gone from, and I don't know if it's like gambling or podcasts or what it is, but people anticipate that your predictions and the things that you think are going to happen 4 or 5 years down the line, or even 1 year down the line, if you're wrong about it, they'll hold a grudge as if like you're supposed to be 100% certain of what's going to happen when it happens. All we can do is make these predictions in the moment based on the information that we have. And I don't know what information that we currently have right now about Colorado that says, man, this is working really well.
And here's what's different about college football compared to when Deion took over: the unlimited transfers. There were a number of coaches, Lane Kiffin among them, who would say it's good to take a lot of transfers because then they can't leave you, as opposed to when, if you bring in a high school kid, he could transfer out because you got the one-time transfer. So a lot of coaches thought, I'll bring in transfers. They're stuck here. That's how I will build depth. That is not the case anymore. All of these transfers that Deion brings in, they can now go out as quickly as they came in. And I'm very curious how that changes the personnel and the roster building that you're going to do. Yes, that means he can bring in a lot more players. Guys who transferred elsewhere can still transfer to Colorado, but it's going to be a lot. It's harder for everybody now to hold on to players. And if you have a culture and a program that is built on the transactional relationship of all of this, you're going to have a lot of guys leaving and without a reason to stay. So I'm very curious how this rule change has impacted Colorado and impacts what Deion wants to build, because he can't bring in guys and hold them there. And if they don't work out, they're on the depth chart. Those guys are going to leave because that's what they've bought into. And that's the culture that they have at Colorado.
Yep. I'm with you. And like, it is funny too. It's like, now that you have the ability to consistently leave whenever you want with impunity, you almost can take riskier chances on places, get there, get a feel for it. And if it's not going well, you can leave again. Like, to me, it's interesting with, and maybe we'll just stick with Colorado for the sake of this point that I'm making. But if you're Deion Sanders and you're recruiting a 5-star offensive tackle, if you are that offensive tackle, why are you going to Colorado? Like, what is the sales pitch? Is the sales pitch to get a great social media following, to play for a superstar, to do things a different way, to help build something? All these pitches are, but the one pitch that I don't know that's there is, come play for a proven entity that will develop you into a top 5 pick and an All-American. So if you want to take that risk and go play for Deion Sanders, again, this is just the example I'm using, or if you want to go somewhere else and try to win a starting job when it's not guaranteed, and you know, you might not have gone there in 3 years ago, but you'll go there now, you can go get a lay of the land, get yourself in a competition, get a feel for the coaching staff and how things are going there. And if you don't like it or you lose a job, you can bounce. So like for me, if I were a recruit, I would go to the best, most prestigious place first, do the thing that is the hardest, see how I stack up. And if it doesn't go the way that I've planned, go to a lower level school where I can play quicker. There's
so
no,
you're calling Colorado football the safety school. The backup plan.
Colorado is not the safety school. I think Colorado is a risk to go play for, because you're going to play for an atypical sales pitch. And it doesn't mean it can't work out. Like, it's going to work out great for Travis Hunter. Like, he went there and he's a star. His social media, he's probably already making millions of dollars. He's probably going to be a first round pick next year. Like, Travis Hunter. But it's an atypical, different sales pitch because we've never seen anything like that before. So if you are wary of how that's going to go for you, in the past, making that decision or that commitment to go there would have been much more drastic, much more severe in terms of how long you would have to be there and the penalties for leaving that place than it would be to say now, hey, you know what? I'm not sure. I'm not 100% positive that this is the perfect place for me. I love your pitch. I love you, Dion. I'm going to go play for you for a spring and see how it goes. And if it doesn't go well, you can leave. Like, that never used to be the case. So, like, to me, it's like, no, that wasn't a safety school comment. I'm saying, if I were a recruit, I would take the biggest possible swing I could at whatever I was hoping for and not worry about the depth chart, not worry about anything. Get to that place, try it out. If it doesn't work out, you can leave. So, like, that's just my thought process on it. So, Chris, here are some G5 standouts who are also on the move. Arkansas State defensive end, Keyron Crawford. Kent State defensive tackle, CJ West. Georgia State defensive end, Javon Dennis. Colorado State wide receiver, Justice Ross Simmons. The last three names that I just listed there were all conference players. So this is interesting because a lot of times group of five people that we lose track of or people have never heard of go on to these teams. They play right away and are actually a lot better. Like, I like to think of, like, what would Khalil Mack have done if he were in college football now? You know, like, so people might not have known who Khalil Mack was back in 2005 or whatever it was, or 15. But they certainly know who he is now. And he played his entire career at Buffalo. So anybody from the G5 that I just named there that stood out to you last year while you were watching, or guys that you think could be difference makers?
Look, we mentioned it earlier. Defensive linemen and offensive linemen are a premium in the portal. Three of those four guys are defensive linemen. CJ West from Kent State specifically is a defensive tackle, an all-MAC defensive tackle, and those are really hard to find in the portal. So I would expect those guys to get a lot of interest, especially CJ West, because teams need linemen. They need defensive tackles. You know, like, I think of people like, was it Josiah Stewart, I think, was a star at Coastal Carolina. He goes on to Michigan. Jared Verse was a star at Albany, goes to Florida State and becomes potentially a top 10 pick. I think the defensive line specifically, you've seen a lot of success from guys who move up from group of five to power four, or however you want to say it. So, yeah, you know, it's one of those things. Again, for a group of five fan, you're probably going to lose a lot of those guys who are really good players, but especially in the trenches. Very hard to keep good players. And in the spring portal, especially, teams are looking for guys to plug holes and patch up some things. You're not going to find a lot of stars. That's what makes linemen so valuable in the portal.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Okay, let's go on to Michigan real quick before we check in with Kenny and Seth on Alabama and Georgia. Michigan received probation and show cause penalties stemming from the NCAA investigation into the recruiting violations from 3 years ago. Did you read into the story at all? It looks like there are some penalties or show cause penalties for the coaches who were involved, including head coach Jim Harbaugh. Michigan will serve 3 years of probation. They will face recruiting restrictions, and I believe will have to pay a fine. And the coaches involved, again, will face a one-year show cause.
So this is not the Connor Stallions situation. This is from 2020. This is COVID recruiting and coaching responsibilities during that dead period when basically nobody could do anything.
And when Jim Harbaugh didn't want to cooperate, too.
Yes, this is the thing that some Michigan fans and media had said was just a cheeseburger. You know, that is not what this was. The result was 3 years. It was a negotiated resolution, essentially, Michigan made with the NCAA, the result, and five individuals, five coaches. 3 years probation, a fine, recruiting restrictions, 1 year show cause for those five coaches. But they also said one former coach did not participate in the agreement. That portion of the case will be settled once this case is totally closed. And Harbaugh's lawyer, Tom Mars, said, Coach Harbaugh filed a lengthy response to the notice of allegations, which has not been made public. I see Michigan changed its position to get this resolved, which is not surprising. I can almost hear the wheels of the bus going womp, womp. That is Tom Mars saying Michigan is back in the bus over Jim Harbaugh to try to move past this. So that one former coach who did not participate in the agreement, I'm assuming, based on all of that, is probably Jim Harbaugh, who is now coaching the Los Angeles Chargers. So ultimately, nothing major here penalty-wise. I don't know how this is going to impact the Connor Stallions stuff. They were not on probation at the time the Stallions thing happened, so yet to see on all of that. It sounds like no Michigan coaches will be suspended anymore. So we're basically finally now moving past this. But this was, for people who didn't remember, this was the thing the NCAA said, had released a statement to say, no, this is more than not a cheeseburger. And there are, again, several schools who got in trouble for this. Air Force, Tennessee, Arizona State, which hasn't had its final penalties yet. But there are a lot of teams who are very, very mad and coaches who are very upset at the teams and the coaches who did recruiting in various things during the COVID dead period, because that was obviously an uneasy time and they had a blanket dead period for everybody. You're not. And so the ones who went around that and did certain things, people wanted to
You can
to
make a case that it was just completely inconsiderate with the information that we knew at the time about COVID to public safety and health like that.
Right. That was the reason for it. Yes.
Yeah. So that's that. I mean, I guess
we don't know about Connor Stallions yet. We still haven't gotten official word on that dude on the sideline in the Central Michigan gear that sure looked like Connor Stallions in Central.
You
Michigan.
Are wearing maroon and gold right Connor now. Stallions. So I don't know.
This is kind of look like a CMU shirt. No, it's a Detroit City FC soccer team.
You a soccer guy?
This is what that is. Oh, big soccer guy.
How can you be a wrestling guy, a college football guy, a Lions guy? I don't even know how you'd have enough bandwidth to like keep up with all this stuff.
It's tough. It's hard to follow soccer during football season for sure. I kind of can't pay attention to it, but I almost went to Central Michigan. I visited a few times, went to a game where Dan LeFever was quarterback. They played Akron that day. They used to have some studs at CMU, by the way. Nice place near the Soaring Eagle Casino. Used to go up there a lot.
I have driven through there and I have been to that casino. Thank you for bringing up memories. I used to drive through Michigan all the time on recruiting stories back in my Ohio State beat writing days, and beautiful state, very underrated state, I think.
Very good state. And so Connor Stallion stuff, that's still ongoing. We don't know when that's going to be resolved. Central Michigan has not responded to who that
it was resolved on January 8th, unfortunately, for everybody who's but we'll see how that all plays out, and I'm sure we'll hear more from that in the future. Okay, Chris, thanks so much for joining the show. I'm gonna dip out here and talk to Seth and Kenny about the Alabama and Georgia spring games. So how are you guys doing today?
I'm good.
Doing well. Yeah. Getting ready for all this portal fun, whether it's going to be the end of the world or just a kind of small trickle of whatever's. I don't know
what to believe at this point. It probably seems like that might be more scary for Alabama than Georgia at this point, but We are recording this on Monday, April 15th. The transfer portal opens on Tuesday, the 16th. So if not at these two programs, certainly in the sport, there's going to be a lot of fireworks. So first, let me start off with you here, Kenny. I heard you mention before we started the show that this is your first spring game because your previous life, they didn't have spring games in Iowa. I didn't even know that. I don't know how I didn't know that, but I did not know that. Obviously, this is a big time situation for Alabama, new head coach, a lot of new faces around the program, and of course, a lot of interest with over 70,000 people coming. What was your experience like seeing Alabama out there for the first time running plays under Kalen DeBoer?
Yeah, just to start with the atmosphere, I mean, it felt like a game day. You're walking around downtown Tuscaloosa. The city was on fire. I mean, people everywhere. The Walk of Champions that Alabama does into the stadium before the game was filled to the brim. Even going into the nighttime, the city of Tuscaloosa had to release a statement saying there was an overflow downtown. So there was a lot of people out there. The interest was high. When I watched the team on the field, it was about what I was expecting. I think the offense got off to a really hot start. And I think in some ways, the scoring system was kind of tailored to the offense winning the game. I think the defense came around in the second half and really did well. So balanced effort on both sides. I think if we're talking about Kalen DeBoer's offense, the thing that probably stood out to me the most is when you think about Kalen DeBoer and Washington, it's centered around Michael Penix and the elite receivers that they had. But he's always said that he's going to build his offenses around his personnel. And it's obvious that the strength of the offense is at the running back position. And we saw Justice Haynes and Jim Miller and Richard Young really kind of emerge and make really strong impressions. And I get the feeling that Alabama is going to be leaning heavily into the run this fall. Obviously, Jalen Miller is going to be a big part of it through the air. But I wouldn't be too surprised to see the Kalen DeBoer offense this year be more prioritized towards the run and those three backs. So those are my kind of general impressions. And I think from 30,000 feet, the talks in January of Alabama's demise were greatly exaggerated. This is going to be a team that's going to be competing for an SEC championship and playoff contention this fall.
It is kind of funny, and I don't know if you're with me on this, Seth, but like when Kalen DeBoer took the Alabama job, like I thought, oh my God, like is Jalen Milroe going to have a Jalen Hurts type transformation as a passer? Are they going to come in and, you know, are we going to see this high flying offense? And then I read your recap, Kenny, and it was just like run. And not to say that he's not going to have any growth, but how important of a year and development do you think this still is going to be for Jalen Milroe? And what do you expect after watching him, you know, in his spring game this week?
Yeah, I think it's going to be huge. And even though the emphasis and maybe what your biggest takeaway is from the game is the strength of the run game, Jalen Milroe had a good day. I mean, he led multiple scoring drives. He had four drops on the day. So you look at his final stat line, it's 3 for 9 for 100 yards with four drops. It would have looked a lot better if the receivers held on to the ball. I think the thing with Jalen is you know that he's going to be able to throw the ball down the field. Kalen DeBoer's offense is about timing and rhythm and going through your read progressions. And I think that's been the biggest thing for him this spring is just kind of not only learning the offense, but just kind of rewiring some things that he, you know, held over from the previous offensive regime and getting a chance to get comfortable in Kalen DeBoer's system. So I think his progression as a passer is going to be seen this fall. I think he's going to be a really big part of the offense, and I'm excited to see what it looks like. So I came away impressed with Jalen Milroe on Saturday. I think it's a healthy quarterback competition, and it's really crazy what a difference a year makes, because last year quarterback was a really big question mark on the team, and you come out of spring practice and you feel like Jalen Milroe's a great starter, and Ty Simpson, the backup, is, you know, probably one of the best, if not the best backup in the country, and somebody who's going to continue to push Jalen this fall. So Alabama's quarterback room is in a good place. And I think we're going to see Jalen Milroe take that next step and, you know, really establish himself as one of the names to know on the college circuit in terms of the quarterback position.
Seth, after hearing all of that, is Georgia better than Alabama? Go.
Probably. I still think they are, but ask me again after the portal season's over. Let's see what Alabama adds. I see that Georgia-Alabama game in late September as the kind that if it were on a neutral field, I'd pick Georgia with some, you know, some confidence. I wouldn't, like, you know, lay a bunch of points, but the game being in Tuscaloosa make it interesting. Let's see how things look after the spring window.
How did things look on the field for Georgia this weekend, though?
You know, it was kind of the opposite of what Kenny was describing on the field and in the stands. Like, Georgia had construction going on for about half the stadium, so it was limited to, I don't even remember what attendance was announced at, but like probably in the 30 to 40,000 area. And I've been in that stadium when they've, like Kirby Smart's first year, they had, like, they announced 93,000. And they've kind of kept it going since then. So it was a subdued game, and that kind of reflected the lack of drama this spring. It was a whole lot of passing because they do that in the spring. So it was opposite of what Kenny was describing at Alabama. But it was, you know, the takeaway, if you're a Georgia kind of Pollyanna optimistic kind of person, is that because the defense had a good day and the defense was missing like three players who are sitting out the spring because of injuries, including Malachi Starks and Smile Munden, then you're optimistic about the defense, but don't worry about the offense because they weren't really trying. But also the realist probably says, it's spring. So, you know, who knows?
Yeah. Well, I think that maybe the spring game was more interesting at Alabama because of just the new look. Anytime the fans get a chance to see a new team, a new program under a new head coach, there's a lot of excitement, probably some angst in Tuscaloosa when you're replacing the greatest coach of all time. But let's hear what Kalen DeBoer had to say about his first A-Day.
Yeah, you know, I think today was probably the day where it just really felt, you know, seeing the guys come on the walk of champions, just seeing that and feeling the energy and the excitement of what it would be on a Saturday, you know, that was a lot of fun. And being in the locker room, just the excitement, you know, and, you know, even today out there, I thought the guys, as hard as they're playing, I mean, there was times where they were out there just looking out for each other, too. I don't care if it was, you know, offense, defense, but most importantly, offense and defense. You know, playing the game the way it's supposed to be played, you know, the energy, wanting to go out there and make the plays, but also not putting the team at risk of, you know, just to go out and make that one potential play that could put someone at risk. But the energy, the excitement kind of leading up to the spring game was something I think kind of hit me today.
Kenny, are the players buying in to Coach DeBoer? Like, do you feel like, you know, not that there would be any doubt that they would, but do you kind of feel like there's a lot of Saban still hanging over everything, or do you kind of feel like they've turned the page and have completely, you know, bought in, for a lack of a better word, into the direction they're going?
Yeah, I think there's obviously going to be a Saban element, especially in this first year. I mean, this is a lot of the carryovers where Saban got. So there's going to be a lot of that in this first year. I think as time goes on, you're going to start to see that influence and that figure start to maybe fade out a little bit, and more of DeBoer comes into the forefront. But definitely this year, that's going to be an element to it. But they're definitely buying in. I mean, there was a quote from Deontay Lawson, starting linebacker, that said, you know, you really can't have a normal conversation with somebody like Nick Saban. Well, with Kalen DeBoer, he's somebody that we feel comfortable with, somebody that allows us to be ourselves on the field, off the field, and it's made it a really relaxing environment. Malachi Moore described the kind of Saban environment as a little militant in terms of how they operate, and it's obviously something that works really well. So this isn't anything to disparage, you know, Saban's style, but DeBoer's just a little different. He's more of a player's coach. He's a lot more of a relaxed personality. Alabama's playing music at practice now. They're allowing players to wear number zero, which Saban didn't allow. And there are coaches and Kalen DeBoer having a Twitter account. Even stuff like that that is normal across the country is taboo at Alabama. So those type of things make players comfortable. And everybody, it seems to be really bought in. Jalen Miro said it as well, that, you know, the team really wants to play hard for Coach DeBoer. And he himself feels a lot of confidence in the fact that DeBoer has confidence in him. And it is always kind of giving criticism, but giving positive reinforcement behind it, just making players comfortable. So I would say that the players are bought in. And, you know, in terms of the transfer portal, it's going to be really interesting to see how much attrition there is from Alabama. I think when you look across the country at different coaches, new coaching staffs, there's always the question of how many players are going to exit out of spring because they're, you know, they don't like the coaching style, they didn't mess with their new position coaches. But everything that I've gleaned is that it's been a pretty strong transition, and the players are really responding to this new coaching staff. So that's not to say that Alabama's not going to have any departures, but I don't think it's going to be a mass exodus at all. So everything, you know, as considering how Saban retired and what transpired and how quickly they got a new coach and everything from January to now, it's gone about as well as you can expect for a program under the microscope that Alabama's under.
Yeah, and probably the reason why you make that hire as quickly as they did to try to, you know, keep the train on the tracks. I am very amused, Seth, by the differences between these two programs right now, because you're talking about the two best programs in college football, and one's like all excited to turn the page, and the other one's like trying to get to the season to see if they can get back onto the national championship track. Let's listen to a soundbite from Georgia quarterback Carson Beck about how excited he was to play on Saturday.
Honestly, not a lot. I mean, it's just a glorified scrimmage. That's what it is at the end of the day. It's more for fun, you know, come out here in Sanford, play in front of the fans. Obviously, every single day we're going to go out there and compete. So I say fun. You know, competing is fun. And obviously, I don't like losing. We tied, which isn't a loss. But I'd rather win. But it's all good. You know, spring, go out there, see what the guys can do. You know, maybe try to do some things that you haven't done to see, you know, okay, maybe I can do this in the game. Maybe, you know, throw this a certain way. But go out there, try some things, and just try to have fun and compete.
Sounds like somebody was using the hand dryer in the bathroom while he was talking there at the end, but I think we got a good glimpse of it. But hey, Seth, when I was covering Ohio State, the spring game was boring in the sense that I don't feel like it often told us how good the team was going to be. Not a lot to take away. The rules are always weird. You don't want anyone to get injured. But the most exciting thing about it was always seeing the high-level recruits play for the first time. And I know Georgia is in kind of a situation where, you know, their quarterback is returning, and same with Alabama to a certain extent. But what were some of the thoughts that you took away from guys like Ra Ra Thomas and Colby Young and some of the other guys now that Ladd McConkey and Brock Bowers and those guys are gone?
Yeah, I was going to say it's not so much recruits anymore. It's portal guys.
Portal guys, yeah.
Because those are the ones that are going to play right away at places like Georgia and Alabama and Ohio State. There were, you know, KJ Bolden, the five-star safety, had some moments, but he's not going to start right away, but he could start soon. But Colby Young got a lot of buzz this spring coming out of practices and scrimmages, and this one had a couple nice catches in traffic and showed that he may be this guy that goes from one offense at Miami and betters his numbers when he goes to another one that on paper is a better offense. And you're like, how does that happen? It's like, well, you know, it's a better fit, literally and figuratively. And Georgia needs that guy that, like, on third down or in the red zone inside the five, which is where he caught a touchdown the other day, can make that big catch. Just that big body. And Ra-Ra Thomas, we saw a little bit of him. We were kind of reminded that Dominic Lovett is still on this team, and people kind of forget about him. Didn't see much from the other two receiver transfers, London Humphreys and Michael Jackson. But, you know, London Humphreys is only a sophomore, so he was kind of signed more for the future than for this year. But what really impresses about Georgia this year, and we heard from Carson Beck about not being too excited about this game in general, but, like, he's got a lot of weapons. He's got Colby Young as this possession receiver guy. He's got Dominic Lovett as a speed guy. Dylan Bell and Ra-Ra Thomas are like a little bit of both. They're the outside receivers who can make the intermediate catch, the first down catch, third down catch. He's got deep threats in Lovett, Arian Smith, Anthony Evans. He's, you know, some guys I'm probably forgetting just because they're that. They've got a variety. And it's, you know how a couple years ago when everyone alleged that Georgia won two national championships because the other team kept losing their best receivers, Marvin Harrison, and then the year before that, Jameson Williams and John Metchie. And the answer that Georgia had was, well, we don't have like that one guy we can't afford to lose at receiver, at least. They have lost Brock Bowers. So they're built better. They're built to withstand that. And it's kind of the same thing. Brock Bowers isn't there anymore, but they still have this plethora of options, to quote Three Amigos, that they're going to be really deep there.
I mean, it just, every single time one of you speaks, I think about the other program, and it's like, who's going to be the leading receiver for Alabama? I mean, they lost Isaiah Bond to the portal. Jermaine Burton's going to the NFL draft. Like, who are the guys that stood out to you so far in the spring, Kenny? And do you think that they can have a productive enough receiver core this year to make a push for the SEC title?
Yeah, I think to answer your first question, I think Jeremy Bernard is the favorite right now to lead the receiver room. Somebody who actually played a good amount at Washington as the fourth receiver behind three guys who are about to be selected in the NFL draft, I believe it's next week. He came in with institutional knowledge of the offense and really made a strong impression on A-Day. I believe he had three catches for over 100 yards, showed speed, showed good hands, route running, yards after catchability. So somebody that I think is going to be a really impactful player. And then behind him, you have Kobe Prentice and Kendrick Law, two guys that have contributed Alabama's offense over the last few seasons. And I think when you look at Alabama's receiving core, it's not like a typical Alabama receiver room. There isn't this standout star that you kind of know about, a Jerry Jeudy, a Devontae Smith, a Waddle, a Ruggs, a Jameson Williams.
It's that list is very long, yeah, Kenny.
Exactly. And it's kind of crazy because a lot of those guys played on the same team. So that just shows kind of the pedigree of receivers at Alabama. But it's not going to be, you know, that type of receiver core, at least right now, in terms of headline names. But it is a group that, you know, if you look at all the sum of total parts, it is a group that I think is going to be really productive. And at the end of the day, Kalen DeBoer's offense is about creating mismatches with pre-snap motions and putting players into space. And there wasn't a lot of that on Saturday. It was pretty vanilla. So I think they're going to be able to scheme guys into, you know, positions where they can make plays. And I honestly would not be surprised if receiver is a position that Alabama might target in the spring portal window. I know a lot of the attention is about offensive line and defensive back, but if there's a player coming out in the portal that is too good to pass up that can help them on the receiver, particularly an outside guy, I would think Alabama would probably be pretty aggressive in trying to bring somebody in. And then something else for Alabama fans know of this person, but maybe on a national scale, he's going to be somebody that's on people's radars as far as Ryan Williams, a five-star in the 2025 class, or reclassified to 2024, is arriving at Alabama this summer. He's been frequently at practices, just kind of watching and observing. So it'll be really interesting to see if he's going to be able to come in and make an immediate impact, because he is, within Alabama high school lore, a generational player, somebody who won Mr. Football as a sophomore. That's never been done before. Won it again as a junior. He's racked up over 80 touchdowns in his high school career. I mean, he's a pretty incredible talent. So that's somebody that's kind of on the back burner that Alabama fans are hoping can come in and make an impact as well.
And the important first recruiting get for Kalen DeBoer there too, to kind of just get people to stop hitting the panic button. It is kind of crazy to me to think that it's like, and I don't know if I'm alone in this, and maybe Georgia to a certain extent, maybe it's a bad example, is kind of been in the same scenario, but it's like whenever I hear, well, they don't have Devontae Smith and Henry Ruggs and Jerry Jeudy, and it's like, it's going to be different. It's like, oh God, they don't have a star, you know? And like, usually these programs just have a ton of stars. But then you realize that maybe one's coming in too. And I'm going to ask both of you guys this. I'll go back to Seth here first. What is Georgia's biggest concern going into next year?
I think defensive line and run defense. That was something that took a big dip last year. They were number three or top three nationally, not just in the SEC, nationally in run defense every year from 2019 to 2022. They had guys like Jordan Davis, Jalen Carter, Trayvon Walker, Devontae Wyatt, all first-round picks on their D-line. They didn't have that last year. They took a dip down to like the 30s. They're hoping to get a little bit better at that this year. I think they're going to be faster on defense this year. Like, the guys behind them are important. And moving Michael Williams from DN to outside linebacker, he's just a big, long guy that could really help them there. Not just pass rushing, but just off the edge, period. Kind of guy that other teams would probably want to run away from. But, you know, they still don't have that guy in the middle. They've got some guys that could be. I do think that's something that if the right guy jumps in the portal, they'll look at. I think they might look at like a veteran running back with Monday's news of Andrew Paul, who, you know, wasn't going to be starter or anything, but he's he's a veteran, sort of. They could look at that. But I think D-line, like, they look, Jordan Davis isn't walking back through that door. Jalen Carter's not walking back through that door. But their run defense could be a little bit better. Now, they also lost, like, three secondary starters. So maybe we're going to look back and say that that should have been a little bit more of a red flag. But you guys know, in college football these days, everybody gives up passing yards because everybody passes. It's really more about, and Georgia's had some really good defensive backs. It's really more about, like, what kind of pass rush you get. That's what makes the difference. And I think that's another thing that Georgia's going to hope that it has more of that this year.
Yeah. What about Alabama, Kenny?
Yeah, I think pass rush is near the top of the list, considering you lose two NFL guys, Dallas Turner, Chris Braswell. There isn't that. Aaron Parent right now is more of a committee approach, but they have some veterans at the top of the room that they feel confident in, and some young guys as well. I think past that, depth at cornerback and offensive line are going to be two areas of concern. When you think about the attrition, particularly at defensive back, I think that's one of the more underrated parts of Nick Saban retiring, is that the defensive back room was his group. And him retiring led way to a lot of attrition in the portal, not just the frontline guys like the Terrion Arnolds and the Kool-Aid McKinstrys and Caleb Downs who transferred out, but guys behind them that were highly touted recruits that would have been strong depth pieces this year are now at other schools. So you look at Alabama's secondary, it's Damani Jackson, a transfer from USC, is the most experienced cornerback on the team, and this is his first spring with Alabama football. Everybody else in the cornerback room is a true freshman or a redshirt freshman. Behind starting safeties, you have true and redshirt freshmen. So getting those guys up to speed is going to be a challenge. You hope that they can stay healthy if you're an Alabama fan, but you kind of have to rely probably on a few freshmen to play. And I know Alabama is going to go into the transfer portal and try to seek out help at cornerback and offensive line. But as you both know, recruiting for depth out of the portal is probably one of the hardest things that you can do, because if you're in the portal, you want to play. So it's hard to sell those guys on coming in and being a developmental piece, and maybe you'll be a big piece in 2025. So they kind of need help at frontline starter in those positions and depth. So it's going to be interesting to see how they manage that. But those will probably be, you know, my biggest areas of concern on the team right now.
All right, guys. Well, thanks so much for giving us the post-spring game update. You know, hopefully for your sakes, we won't need you back in a week to explain how the roster fell apart or the unexpected player entered the portal, but it is 2024 and it is college football. Appreciate both of you and look forward to having you on the show again here in the near future.
Yeah, appreciate
thanks,
it.
Thanks,
thanks so much to Chris Vanini. Thank you so much to Seth Emerson and Kennington Smith. Thought that was a jam-packed episode. We will obviously be on top of all things portal. We have a show later on in the week. If when more developments come, we will cover it on the show. We appreciate you guys being here. Thank you so much for listening. That was the latest edition of Until Saturday.